Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina, here with Robert Schneider, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. The New York State School Boards Association provides leadership to school boards through advocacy, information, and programs. Welcome, Robert Schneider, or can I just say, welcome, Bob.
Bob is fine, David, and thank you for having me.
Well, the big news this week is more to do with the host of this program than anything else. Before we get into the discussion about school boards and education in New York, I do want to let folks know it was announced earlier today that our CEO, Dr. Alan Chartok, has decided to retire. And what a legacy he has had in not only helping to create WAMC, but in New York State government and politics, from his internship programs to the university and his professorship to the Legislative Gazette newspaper and the Capital Connection program that we're speaking on right now. His stretch in the political realm in New York and in public information really had no peer.
That's good news for Alan as far as retirement, but this area and the state is losing an important media presence who has probably changed a lot of minds and impacted a lot of people's thinking. So good luck to Alan.
Indeed. From there, let's talk about the New York State School Boards Association when it comes to the New York State budget. Now, Bob, $229 billion state budget. We've said that number over and over again over these airwaves. But I think the big news for education, and I've been around long enough to remember the campaign for fiscal equity, for example, and trying to create a sound basic education for all New York's students. And now, for the first time, we really have reached a, quote, remarkable milestone. We have the foundation formula, first created in 2007, is fully funded for the first time. That's a pretty huge bit of news, really, in the budget.
Absolutely, David. We are thrilled with what the end result was for public education as far as the New York State budget. I've been with the School Boards Association for 24 years now, and I've never seen funding like this. And this is an important time to have that funding for all of our public school districts in the state and all the children that are served throughout the state. You're looking at a $3 billion increase in school aid. Just incredible. We have funding both as far as the foundation aid finally fully funded, and also remember we have the federal funds from the pandemic that is part of the full budget for the school districts. And it's important to note that this funding is funding a situation where we really have to start focusing in on public education and supporting our students as far as the learning gap based on the pandemic, other issues, mental health supports, and other inflationary cost drivers that impact the school district budget and spending. So we're thrilled about it. And as you'd stated, the foundation aid formula, which is old and needs to be revised and updated, but the fact that that campaign for fiscal equity was won in the early 2000s, being fully funded now is important. And as we move forward, we hope the legislature and the governor uses this year's baseline funding as the starting point so we can see important increases moving forward.
Now, of course, the foundation aid does not change how schools are funded, right? We're funded through the property tax system in New York, and that's
correct.
Been criticized over the years when you have, for example, in different communities, you know, Westchester is going to be different than the Bronx, for example, or upstate, you could find a more rural community with less of a tax base, or vice versa, depending on where you are in a city. So
right.
The equity there is difficult to obtain. And I wonder, you know, from a New York State School Boards Association perspective, would you rather see the funding come out of the property tax base, from the general fund, from a dedicated fund? You know, where do you come down on that?
Well, I think it's time that the legislature and the education stakeholders take a look at the foundation aid formula and look to update that. There's data that is very old and stale. And to your point, we really have to determine what equity is throughout the state. What's important, as I said earlier, we have this amount in play, and we already have a property tax cap in play in this state. So our school business officials, our superintendents, and our school boards have to be very diligent when they are focusing on where they're going to spend the money. As far as the how the funds are received by the state, that's kind of out of our lane. We are the organization that supports our school boards and other education stakeholders. That, you know, how do we advocate how the money should be spent? But on the revenue side, it's up to the powers that be in the legislature and the governor. There could be unique ways to fund this in the future. But right now, to your point, the foundation aid formula is the operating aid, if you will, throughout the state. There's a calculation, the foundation aid formula, which we just talked about, that distributes money to a variety of different districts throughout the state. And yes, we have to maintain equity, but also I think we have to maintain the baseline for all these districts, because school districts are important elements, if you will, or organizations in each community, and that was that proved out again during the school budget votes. 98.5% of the school budgets in the state were approved by the local voters, and the budget vote is available or open for folks to vote on all day on that Tuesday from a couple of weeks ago. So that kind of ratifies the fact that the communities are in support of their school district budgets and how they're spending them. But we have to keep in mind also with the foundation aid, that's the operating aid, it gives our school districts a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of differences throughout the state. You have districts on Long Island that have different requirements to expend the money versus, as you said, rural schools upstate. So we have to keep an eye on making sure that the local spending is there. They understand their communities the best, the business officials, the superintendents, the school boards. So we want to make sure whatever changes is that we have that local ability to determine where that foundation aid is spent.
Well, you mentioned something, noting the school budget votes, which, you know, occurred not so long ago on a Tuesday. And I just want to note that I, of course, voted for the school budget where I live. But you mentioned they're open all day, and I encountered this 2 years in a row now, and I'm wondering if you know. You may not know anything about it, so just tell me if you don't.
Sure.
But our school, and I won't name it, but our school district opens the polls at 2:30 in the afternoon. And 2 years in a row, I went before because of my schedule and showed up to lock doors and noticed there were a number of retirees along with me saying, what's going on? Shouldn't they be open all day long, not just for part of the day? Don't we want to get as many votes?
To my knowledge, they are open most of the day. They open up early in the morning and they close at, I believe, 9 o'clock. So that sounds like that could be a one-off situation. I can check into that for you. But for the most part, you know, my school district, I got in before work and voted. And previous years, I would go after work and they were open. The polls were open until 9 o'clock. So.
And when you have people showing up to the polls, that's a good thing, right? I mean, as you said, 98% of these budgets pass. So people showed up and they passed the budgets for their schools.
Sure.
But 98% is a percentage of how many people who voted at all. So
Right. What's
the turnout in school budget elections?
Well, the data I have as far as the number of voters throughout the state was 556,876 voters. Now, that turnout was down by 13% from last year, but up 7% from 2021. We had a pandemic high of just under 1.6 million voters came out in 2020, and that was when the absentee ballots were mailed to all registered voters, and they can mail it in. Now, keep in mind that that's a high number that year, and with that high number, we had high 90% budget approval in that year also. So the turnout, I don't have the actual percentage right now as far as throughout the state. We're working on that, but 556,000 voters is somewhat in line with previous years other than that pandemic high year of 2020. So, but again, voters have opportunity to vote in most districts all day. So they have a right to go in and vote on their budget and their school board elections.
We're speaking with Bob Schneider, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. Bob, what I'm getting out of this is maybe a bit of good news. You mentioned the pandemic high ballots were mailed to everybody. So they could vote via ballot and the numbers were higher then. Doesn't that lend to the argument that when you make it as easy as possible for people to vote, they will? So, for example, instead of a mailed form, if you had an emailed form, because obviously mailing costs money, but couldn't you see a future where that would be a regular thing?
It's possible. We're all for any innovations and improvements that will drive more voters to the poll. That's important in any type of election. So we could see that down the road. I guess the State Board of Election would have to weigh in on that at some point. I do have some information as far as New York State turnout. It was 9% this year. So that was the percentage. But as you know, other type elections have low turnout throughout the state also.
But still, it's just a sign of people who are not either paying attention, are cynical about the process, or are somehow ignorant or unaware. Isn't that striking in our society, the lack of participation?
Well, it is striking overall, you know, not just public school budget votes, but throughout. But, you know, part of that could be the community is accepting, they don't feel the need to come out. School boards and school districts are probably one of the most transparent governmental entities in the state. There's notifications go out, where is your polling place? We send out budget information. We're required to do that to the community about a month or so out. So we're out there communicating to make sure they have that opportunity to vote. And maybe people understand that the budget makes sense and they just decide not to go out and vote. But the fact is, the people that do come out and vote, the active people in their communities, have throughout the state voted in favor of those school district budgets.
Well, one of the other things that we've been forced to deal with in many ways in our society is guns, and that winds up in school shootings and the need for more school safety. We already see metal detectors in many schools. We have some schools even banning backpacks because of concealed weapons that have arrived at school in them. Have you seen at the New York State School Boards Association more expenditures in that area? In other words, beefing up security at schools? You already mentioned mental health. That's got to be a component as well whenever you're talking about something like that, not to mention the pandemic that impacted so many. So the issue of school security.
Well, we have been hardening school districts since Columbine. A lot of schools, I visit school districts in BOCES throughout the state, and they have the buzz in through, they call them man traps or whatever. You know, they've got the protective glass, they've got the alarm systems, and the door locks and everything else in the school district. So we are extremely focused in and have been on securing the school district site, if you will. But inevitably, you know, things happen in a school district and shooters, it occurs. It's a horrible situation throughout our country. And all we can do as school districts is make sure that our safety plans are up to date, make sure that the private plan that we have for the school district is up to date. The plans basically annually need to be in place by September 1st each year, and they must be submitted to both the state police and local law enforcement within 30 days of adoption, but no later than October 1st. So you have a confidential building level emergency response plan, and you have a district-wide school safety plan. And keep in mind, there's things involved in that plan, drills, making sure people understand what to do. But the fact of the matter is, you can harden a school to the extreme, but you have to understand the mindset of these shooters. Most mass school shooters don't suddenly snap and start killing people. The offenders may be involved in weeks, months, or years of interest, fantasizing, planning, and preparation before the incident. So this means that there's often an extended period of opportunity for threat assessment, intervention, and prevention. And that's the key thing that school districts need to focus in on. And there are many incidents out there where a school mass shooting was foiled or failed. And the reason that happened is because of certain interventions or certain signs that got picked up by that local community. Say an individual was, they call it leakage, was out there, putting stuff on social media. Somebody saw it in the community or somebody saw it in the school and they made the district or law enforcement aware of it. There's other things, assessments of students on an ongoing basis. As you mentioned, mental health. There's a lot of students that come into the building now that have mental health issues or might be in crisis. And you have a lot of adults in that school district that need to keep an eye on those children. And when those children start changing behavior, we have to react. And that's why investment in mental health is so important in school districts. We have to have the professionals in there that can connect with these particular individuals and all school students in the system that might be hurting or in crisis, and we need to support them. And that budget was very positive as far as mental health supports. The governor was one of her priorities in the legislature also. So we have to look at it as we're in a different world, and you can harden a school to the extreme, yet you have to understand that there's other ways to prevent potential shootings by community being involved with the school district community making sure that they're comfortable. If a kid sees another kid acting out or saying things, it needs to be reported. So there's many ways you can stop it, but at the end of the day, there's a combination of human effort and the physical hardening of a school district, and that's an important balance.
Then there's this thing that we used to see in our day, people would call in bomb threats, and you know they call it swatting now, which is to get a big emergency response to a school. We saw a spate of them across New York.
Yep.
You know, this is a really hard thing for schools to deal with. I mean,
yes, it is.
What do? You got to shut down the school.
Well, you know, there's protocol in place, and going back to those two plans I referred to, you know, those are not plans that sit on a shelf and collect dust. You have to be active, and I know superintendents and other personnel in that school district are connected with their law enforcement. There's communication channels, so they can determine quickly if this is a false alarm. And you know, they're going to respond, but, you know, communication has to occur between law enforcement, the school district, other officials, and also the parents. I saw the other day, I believe there was a picture that was posted on Twitter as far as the Pentagon being bombed. It got out there. It got picked up by a few media outlets, and then it ended up being false. So it is a challenge. I mean, this is something, for whatever reason, people do this, either pranks or other countries out there are doing this for whatever reason via social media. So the key ingredient is to determine quickly what's happening. And we do have great connections with law enforcement throughout the state where they can determine pretty quickly if this is happening or not and then call it off and communicate appropriately to parents and others.
Well, one of the other things the New York State School Boards Association deals with is curriculum. You know, we've heard and seen situations at school board meetings that get out of hand with parents threatening school board members because of the curriculum being taught. For example, the so-called critical race theory.
Yes. Well, I think several things have cooled off, and there's a feel in this state now that we're getting back to the important parts of public education versus the national narrative that was ongoing during the pandemic with masks and vaccination, CRT being, critical race theory being overlaid on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. So there was a lot of national narrative that was confusing people. Now, again, I had stated earlier that school districts are probably the most transparent entities in the state. And as far as curriculum development occurs, you know, we have the experts, if you will, the teaching folks and the professionals that create the curriculum. And the curriculum can be created locally. And there are points in time when a curriculum is discussed with the community. A lot of districts might have a curriculum online. So, you know, instead of reacting to what you hear in the national narratives and the stories that come across on Facebook, contact the superintendent, ask them about the curriculum. But, you know, the curriculum is something that is an important piece, obviously, of a student's educational experience. And locally, they have that opportunity to create it, work with the community on it. But keep in mind that the teaching profession, you know, they're professionals, so they know how to develop curriculums and come up with important teaching skills, teaching methods and assessments, and what information that they need to learn. Now, history is being, we're adding to history all the time, and that's a fact. I mean, science, when new discoveries are discovered in the field of science, we add to those theories. Same thing as far as history. We, you know, we do have to be honest, and we have to add history. It's not necessarily changing it completely. It's adding to it, and it's important to recognize that it wasn't all perfect in the past, and it's important to add to it.
We're speaking with Bob Schneider, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. You know, we're hearing all about the future and ChatGPT, right? You know, I'm a college professor, and I already know the dangers there. So school's got to be out ahead of this, don't they?
Yeah, we're offering a summer program, and we have some panelists to talk about ChatGPT. It's a interesting, fascinating technology. I mean, I just look at my high school and middle school careers, and you know, when doing research and papers, we'd have to go to the library, the card catalog. We'd have to do citations and footnotes, even in college. Well, that's all there now for students. So I think what's important is this can be a very powerful tool to assist students. And the whole goal for the future and now is to educate these students to have strong critical and analytical skills. And they have so many more tools in front of them than we do. So the education community has to come up with a way to leverage this for a positive usage for students. In fact, the State Education Department has embarked on the Blue Ribbon Commission on graduation measures and graduation paths. And they've been in the process of working on this over about a year, and they have the education community, the stakeholders all involved. We have representation on that Blue Ribbon Commission. They're also reaching out to communities through thought exchange and asking key questions. What's important? What does a student need to succeed as an adult? What are the things they need to learn? And they're looking at this from a variety of different angles, and they're going to come up with a report and present it to the Board of Regents in November. And it's really looking at what, you know, and ChatGPT has to be part of that, maybe not that particular recommendation, but it has to be a tool that we use to make sure students are learning and getting the life skills they need to be successful in the future. We're not in a situation where it's only the three R's anymore. There's a lot of different things that we have to teach our children. We have to look to have them build foundational skills like initiative, time management, collaboration. We have to prepare students not only for college, but career, civic engagement, and life skills. So there's a lot of things going on, and there's a lot of tools available to us, but we do have to change the way we do certain things, and we have to recognize all students aren't going to go to college. They're going to have very successful careers in the career technical education strand, and they can do that through their BOCES program. They might go on to additional college education, or they might get technical certifications, but there's a lot of opportunity, and a lot of students are probably more geared to doing that type of work, and there's a lot that are geared toward going to college. So State Education Department is looking closely at this and saying, okay, so how do we make assessments? What are the graduation measures, and what are the different paths? Because certain students might not need to take all the regents. They might need to have other assessments taken throughout their career in school. So SED is looking at this, they're recognizing it, but getting back to ChatGPT, I can't tell you right now how we're going to use that in schools, but it sure looks like a very powerful tool for students for the ability to learn and have strong critical and analytical thinking skills.
I know the governor came up to an agreement with lawmakers during the budget negotiations over allowing more charter schools in the state, mm-hmm. most of them in New York City. I believe there are 22 added to the list. Where does NISBA come down on the issue of charter schools?
We oppose charter schools. It's a pretty simple equation. When a charter school opens, resources, money have to go towards that particular charter school from the school district. And only a certain amount of students have access to those charter schools. And you still have all the other students back in the other buildings, and we're still paying for the lights, the teachers, the cleaning, everything else you have to do. So we don't like the structure of it. The only time I think we'd be okay with it is if a local school district wants a charter school to be in their community. In theory, charter schools, when they started decades ago, they were supposed to be incubator programs where you could do some innovative things in teaching and schooling and then bring those things that worked back into the main school district system and apply it to everybody. But that is not the case. We don't see that. We're opposed to it. Now, we were advocating against the charter school increase, and, they came up, I believe, most of the the reissuance of charter schools, mostly in New York City, like you said. So I don't think
so-called zombie schools,
zombie schools, the ones that weren't active, but yet they were recertified or allowed to stay open, that type of thing.
Well, my last question has to do with consolidation. That was a plan that was advanced years ago. There are so many villages and towns and so many different school districts. Why don't you combine some of these and save some money? Why have a tiny school in a little hilltown district?
Yeah.
Why not just combine it with a larger district?
Right. Well, if you look historically, we had thousands of school districts many years ago, and mergers and consolidations have been happening through the decades. You get to a certain point where it really doesn't make sense, in the sense that you merge a district, say it's a rural area, and you could have children on buses for over 2 hours each way. That doesn't make sense. I think the better way to look at it, where there is an opportunity for a merger, they will happen. I'm guessing or estimating roughly the past 10 years, I think there's been 3 or 4 mergers in the state, but we're at a point where we probably have to leverage more technology. You have to give these rural school areas the ability to get certain programs that they might not have because they can't get teachers for certain courses, as an example, or higher level instruction, where you can create regional high schools. That's kind of the better way to go, and we advocate for that. But you get to, a saturation point as far as mergers. In that example, as far as land mass and having students on buses for a long time, as one example, just doesn't make sense.
We are out of time. Our guest has been Bob Schneider, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. Bob, I can't thank you enough for taking all the time to be with us on the Capital Connection this week.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.